Hello and welcome to the Run the Day podcast. I'm your host, Nick Simmons. With me as always is Cam. How you doing, Cam?
Great. I've got a fellow duck with us today and I'm very excited about
ducks
it.
Ducks in the house. Yep. I'm not a duck. I feel like I'm an adopted duck.
You're kind of, yeah.
All right. Adopt you. This You're is one of my favorite ducks. If you don't know the name, JJ Burden, you should. He was a two-sport athlete for University of Oregon, where he was a long jumper, a hurdler, but also a wide receiver.
Yep.
This guy has talent.
And didn't become a wide receiver until walking onto the football team and then playing 9 years in the NFL. It's huge.
I'm thinking, okay, he's probably what, like 6'5", 220?
Yep.
Give me his stats.
He is 5'10", and he was 133 pounds coming in, 157.
He should have been out on the cross-country team.
It's crazy. It doesn't make sense.
This guy has insane skill, but also insane heart. You don't get to be a 9-season NFL player without a ton of heart, and I just love talking to him. I thought he was so inspirational.
Love that, too. And you know what? JJ really shows us what it's like to bring your best every single day. He's inspired me to use that every day. And I know you guys are going to love the wisdom that he brings from this conversation.
This is one of my all-time favorites.
Me too.
Let's jump right in. It's JJ Burden. All right. Here he is coming to us from Phoenix, Arizona. It's JJ Burden. JJ, how are you?
Hey, what's up, Nick? I'm doing great. How you doing, Kamala?
Doing good. We're excited to have you on the show.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, man, this is one I've been looking forward to all day just because we have so much in common. An athlete, an Oregon-based athlete.
I love it.
Yeah, that spent his time in Eugene, Oregon.
Yep.
I guess the thing I wanted to ask you the most, what was your favorite restaurant in Eugene when you lived here?
It was the original Pancake House.
Heck yeah.
Of course.
OHOP, you got to have it.
That place on Saturday and Sunday might be the busiest in the city.
Best breakfast in town.
Yeah. Easy.
Yeah.
Do you
that
make
was
it
so cool too? Because on meat day they used to comp us pancakes, so I love that.
No way.
Oh, that's great. Do you make it back very often?
Yeah, I try to get back there a couple times a year. My in-laws live out in Pleasant Hill, so we definitely get back there.
I love it. So you grew up in Portland.
Yeah, grew up in Portland and went to Lake Ridge High School in Lake Oswego.
Yeah.
All right. They're pretty good.
Interestingly enough, it's right where Run Gum is made, just next door.
Just happens to be.
Yeah. How about that?
Oh, really?
Yeah, just in Lake O there.
Okay.
It's a good neighborhood, man. It's a beautiful place.
Yeah. But my story, Nick, I lived in Northeast Portland, 13th and Killingsworth, and I was part of the busing program.
So it's just resurfaced in the news recently.
Huh.
Yeah.
What was that like?
Oh, dude, it was a challenge because you had to get up really early, and I didn't play any sports until 10th grade because I didn't feel like taking the TriMet bus at 8 o'clock at night to get back into Portland.
Yeah.
But when it became important to me, then I finally said, hey, we got to do what we got to do and jump on that bus to get home.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, it is interesting that it's creeped up in the news again with Kamala Harris calling out Joe Biden. But, you know, was that strange? The neighborhood you described to us just now, we know it. Not all of our listeners know it, but it is what could have been called a rougher neighborhood of Portland. Was it strange going from that neighborhood to school in Lake Oswego, which is arguably one of the more affluent neighborhoods of Portland?
Yeah, it was like I got the best of both worlds because, you're like – in the hood, so to speak, where you raised this area where it's a little different, then all of a sudden you're bussed out to the most affluent city in Oregon. And let me tell you, Nick, when I got to see how some other people were living out there, it kind of motivated me.
You said, hey, I kind of want a piece of that.
The house on the lake, you were definitely into that.
It's what I always say about the meeting in Monaco. People run really fast there, and they say, well, why do people run so fast? I'm like, have you seen the wealth there? People get a little bit fired up about performance when you see the $150 million yacht park next door.
Absolutely.
That's so funny. Okay, and then so you were recruited by University of Oregon. That's not a huge move for you, about 90 minutes south. Did you enjoy your time down here?
Oh, I loved it. I loved it because I was recruited by Oregon in track, but even though I was the number one wide receiver in football, no Division I school recruited me in football. So I figured Oregon was my best bet to run track, but Oregon didn't balk at the idea of me one day walking on in football. So that was one of the reasons why, because Dillinger said, hey, just come down here and run and we'll see what we can do. At least give you a walk-on opportunity at Oregon.
This is incredible to me. You're the number one wide receiver recruit in high school. Why weren't you recruited? Why weren't you offered the scholarship that you were looking for?
5'9", 133.
Wow.
You know what? That's so funny. That's the exact dimensions that I was coming out of high school, and I wasn't recruited either for any sport.
Really?
Yeah. It's one of those things where there's a stereotype in everyone's mind, right? You have to be X, Y, and Z to fit the mold that they're looking for.
Yeah.
And they don't look at talent, and they don't look at state titles, and they don't look at times. They just say, oh, you don't fit the mold that we're looking for. Exactly. I don't know about you, but that had that not getting recruited by any of the D1 schools I want, including University of Oregon, I had this chip on my shoulder. Did you feel this certain, like, I'm going to prove all of these recruiters wrong when you got to University of Oregon?
Absolutely. That was one of my main motivations. It wasn't really about playing in the NFL or anything like that. It's just, I want to prove everybody wrong who looked at me from the outside and judged my potential. So that extra motivation was definitely there when I got to Oregon.
It's not the size of the dog in the fight. It's the size of the fight in the dog. Am I right?
That's right. That's right.
So what were those first few years at Oregon like? I mean, two sport athlete, that's got to be tough. Were you focused on the 100 and 200 or long jump? What were you doing on the track? And then how did that translate into the fall football season?
So basically, when I got to Oregon, the first year I ran, I was a long jumper, high hurdler. And the second year I started secretly watching the football practices because I wanted to see if these guys were that much bigger than me. Mm-hmm. When I was lifting weights, I was watching football practice. And so the second or third day of watching practice, I went out on the field and I stood on the field and I waited for Coach Brooks to kick me off the field. And Brooks comes down to the field and he sees me. He says, "You're Burden. You're the track kid." And I, yeah. He goes, "Why are you out here?" I said, "Coach, because I want to play." And he just kind of like, "Really?" I go, "I want to play." So anyway, after twisting his arm and I met with him, we met with Dillinger, and Brooks said, "We'll give you a shot and let you walk on." And so I walked on that fall, and day one, I was number 14th on the depth chart. 2 weeks later, I was number two, backing up two seniors.
Wow. You know, so
that was when the dual sport at Oregon really surfaced. But at that point, Nick, I was happy, but I was all about track. It really wasn't about football. Like you said, I just had a chip on my shoulder to show everybody wrong.
What Dillinger say? I know Dillinger. You know, I can't imagine you being like, "Hey, coach, I know I'm a track guy, but can I go out for the football team?" What did he say when you brought that up to him?
Well, because I jumped 24.9¾
legit
my senior year, yeah. So I was number two long jumper. And if Oregon wanted me, I said, "Just all I need you to agree to is just give me a shot." And Dillinger and John Gillespie, they held true to their promise. They followed through and they allowed me to walk on if Coach Brooks would accept me.
Wow. So I'm a one-trick pony. I knew I had to run. I couldn't do anything else. I'm the most uncoordinated human being on planet Earth. I can do two laps and that's about it. What's it like having that kind of talent and knowing that you could probably go pro in either sport? How did you narrow it down? How did you choose football?
Well, the thing for me, and I'll be honest, I mean, my passion was track, and I really didn't know how far I could go because I was still dealing with the challenges and just the prejudging of my abilities and all that other stuff. So I just figured if you do the work, you keep working hard, opportunities are going to open. And then my senior year, I went 26-2 and I qualified for the Olympic trials in a long jump. So Nick, I was just sitting there thinking like, hey, maybe this could be our career. And it was never football, but like you, I knew that if you grind it out, if you're consistent and you're patient, you're going to get your shot.
I love it.
That
yeah.
is so cool.
So true. So this is 1988 that you're first drafted. Is that correct? By the Cleveland Browns?
Yep.
That's an Olympic year. It's Seoul. It was Seoul. So what were you thinking as that year came into approaches? I want to be an Olympian. I want to play NFL, or I just want to be open to opportunities and strike when they present themselves.
Well, I wanted to be an Olympian. I wanted to make the Olympic team. And the way I was jumping, and I just knew that I had the potential to really jump much farther. Then all of a sudden, I get a call from the Cleveland Browns. Marty Schottenheimer, head coach. "Hey, we just drafted you." And I was like, "What?" You know, I was like the eighth round, 216th pick. Now, I heard rumors about me in the NFL, but I thought, there's no way. I'm not big enough. I can't play in the NFL. That's not the goal there. So it was really all about track. And so I get drafted, and then I have to go to the Cleveland Browns rookie camp the next week. And I remember this conversation with Bill Dillinger, and I said, "Coach, I'm going to go to the rookie camp just to check it out." And Bill's like, "JJ, you won Pac-10s last year. You're going to win this year. You could win NCAAs. You got a shot at the trials. Don't do any drills." And I go, Bill, I never get hurt at these things.
Oh, no.
Well, Nick, third practice in Cleveland, I tear up my ACL.
Oh, ligament. Come on. Are you serious? Yeah. Oh, that hurts just hearing. Oh, my gosh.
Yep. My first major setback as an athlete. And that was when the mind shift took a change and I started thinking about the NFL because I obviously could not run track.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What happened at those Olympic trials?
Well, we know Carl Lewis won, and then I think Mike Powell was in there, and then the third guy was a 26.9, and I always thought that was my spot.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Did you watch that one from the sidelines then?
Oh yeah, I was watching from the sideline and with my crutches on.
Must have been one of the hardest moments of your life. I mean, I watched the 16 trials from the sidelines, and it was very difficult for me as well.
Really?
Yeah, but I had already made two teams, you know, so I had that. I just was grateful that I'd had that opportunity. What was it like knowing that third spot likely could have been yours?
Well, that's a question people ask me. What is one of your biggest regrets as an athlete? And that is it, that I did not get to finish that senior track season NCAAs was at Hayward Field. So I'm going to get to jump in front of the crowd, and you got a shot with the Olympics too. So that's the big regret, you know, but obviously I played 9 years in the NFL, so it worked out in the end.
Well, if you have the tenacity, you're going to get through obstacles like that. And obviously you did. I'm reminded of another two sport athlete that came through the Ducks, Devin Allen. Did you follow his career at all?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Very similar, placed kind of in the middle between his love for football and his love for track. Tore his ACL. Yeah. It was his first injury.
Did it a few times. Didn't he tear it twice?
Yeah,
either twice. Both ACLs or an ACL and MCL. I can't remember, but he ended up going the track route. You went the football route. Given the era that you were coming up in track and field, I'm sure you said there are some regrets and you would love to have been Olympian. Financially speaking, though, you chose the right one because track and field still doesn't pay very well at all. But back then it didn't pay anything.
Yeah.
What was it like rehabbing that injury and then, you know, ultimately competing for 9 years in a sport where the average length of a career might only be 3 years?
Well, what's interesting is that injury was, although painful, was kind of a blessing in disguise because mentally I did not think I could play in the NFL. But having that year on IR, rehabbing, getting stronger, watching the veterans, learning the system, that's when I started to believe. Mm. And so I went to that next year. My attitude was a lot different than that first year. And yeah, nobody wants to suffer an ACL injury, but that was probably one of the best things that happened for me and it prepared me for this career.
It's almost like redshirting a year, you know, you're just able to kind of get comfortable with the new. You strike me as the kind of person that likes to go all in on something. It gave you this mindset of, hey, now I'm going all in on football.
Yeah, absolutely. Because when you're juggling two sports at Oregon, it was a challenge because I always felt I could have been a better track athlete if I just focused on track. I could have been a better football player if I just focused on football. Mm-hmm. So, but now, when I'm going into my second year in the NFL, it was all football 24/7, 365 days of the year. And obviously improved as an athlete.
What's it like being a 5'10", 157 pound wide receiver? And I just point out those stats because that's exactly my height and race weight as a mid distance runner. I can't imagine being on the gridiron at that weight. What was that like? Did your teammates treat you with respect? Did you feel in charge and dominant on that field? What's it like stepping out on that field, being one of the smaller guys out there?
Well, I knew what everybody thought when they saw me physically. So whenever I got the chance to show them that my size did not matter, you know, I had a heart of a lion. I was going to play like I was a 6'5", 200-pound wide receiver.
Love it.
And my teammates, yeah, they respected me because, one, I had the speed. I was a smart player. I understood where to be, when to be there. I could catch the ball. And, dude, I was willing to go over the middle. Yeah. I didn't care how big they were. And my teams gained so much respect because if they called X crackback where I got to go hit a 260-pound linebacker.
No one's expecting it.
I'm going to hit him as hard as I can. Gosh. He might not move, but I'm going to do my job.
But you're coming like a bat out of hell to make sure you do it. We see in today's game, some of these littler wide receivers, they're just willing to go places that other people won't. And I wish I had been around when you were playing because I think you would have brought a game that I'd love to have watched. How do you think your style of play would fare in today's NFL?
It's really interesting because I compare a lot of the receivers and the game has changed a little bit in terms of how receivers perform on the field, how they run their routes, how they do the releases in so many different ways. And when I look at some of the wide receivers, I probably say DeSean Jackson maybe is a little close to what I did. Even Antonio Brown's a little bigger. I'm faster. But there's some things that he does when he's going against a DB that I noticed. Man, that's a little similar to what I used to do. But one of the things I did, Nick, and you'll appreciate this, is when you got track speed, when you get to the NFL, you got to learn how to play with that fast speed in the game.
Oh, yeah.
Because A lot of guys might run 4.3, but they play at 4.6.
Right.
So I really focused on playing fast and using that speed whenever I could.
Well, and it's agility as well, right? It's one thing to go 4.3 in a straight line, but can you be agile? Yeah. Can you get where you need to be quick and then be an effective player? It sounds like you obviously were. And it sounds like you also follow football still. Do you still follow track and field much?
Oh, dude. I love track and field. I'm all over the Diamond League. I watch the YouTube. I watch everything track and field. I love it.
You are a track athlete through and through who just happens to be gifted with great hands and great speed and ability to play football. But I think you're a track athlete deep down inside.
Oh, you better believe it. And when people ask me what's my favorite sport, it's track and field. It's, you know, I mean, there's nothing like, as a track athlete, the training, the work you put in, and then performing on meet day, and it's you against your competitor. It just, I love those moments because it was based on your ability to prepare well and then execute when that gun goes off.
Well, and I tell all my young listeners and my young followers, there is no greater feeling than setting a goal, working your butt off for it, and then achieving it. It is the most addicting thing in the world. And it's applicable not just in track and field, but in life as well. And trying to teach kids how to set realistic goals, how to build a plan to accomplish those goals, and then carrying those skills on into their professional life. I think it's so important. And you are a motivational speaker. You're going out and teaching people these skills. What's it like teaching the next generation of Americans to bring their best every day?
Oh, I love it. I love it because, you know, as a professional athlete, we learn so much during that journey of climbing to make it to the top. And when we make it, there's so many lessons. There's so many success tips, and to be able to take what I learned in the past and kind of articulate them to audiences where they can see success tips and strategies, action steps they can implement to achieve their goals. It's very, very rewarding because not every athlete wants to be a coach, wants to be a commentator. And I was like, how can I really take what I've learned and share it with the masses? And I've been able to do that.
And you've done it very, very well. You're active on social. You're got the speaking. You got the website. We're gonna link your Instagram and your website as well in the show notes here. But what's it like now? You have witnessed social media just come from basically nothing, MySpace, you know, 2 decades ago, to something that is just omnipresent. As someone who's built a brand online and seen what it's morphed into over the last decade or two, how powerful is that, and how have you harnessed that, this opportunity to reach more people?
Yeah, it's mind-boggling. I cannot believe what social media has evolved to, and how in the business world, if you want to really expand your brand and continue to build your network and continue to engage with others, I mean, you've got to be a part of it. And for my game plan, it's part of what I do every day, and creating content to serve others and create value and attract them to me. But as you put together your day-to-day tasks, your daily method of operation, it is definitely one of those, because it gives you the ability to meet so many people from all over the world, all walks of life. And you never know what can happen as you continue to engage with new people.
You've mentioned about seizing opportunities, or opportunities that have come your way multiple times. What does that mean to you? We hear a lot, oh, you got to seize opportunities. How do you recognize that opportunity? And then how do you go and allocate time and energy and resources to said opportunity to really make it be what it ultimately could be?
Yeah, that's something that's very dear to my heart, because my book, When Opportunity Knocks, 8 Surefire Ways to Take Advantage, really talks about how do you seize your opportunities, because I feel I'm like the poster child of it. But, you know, it's just first, I always try to tell people, you know, you have to understand what it is that you want. You know, what is your why? What is driving you? What are you passionate about? And sometimes people struggle with that. And so I tell them, you got to ask yourself questions like, what's important to you? What fuels your fire? What motivates you? What inspires you? And once you figure that out, then you have a better opportunity to recognize those opportunities that allow you to take you where you want to go. You know, as growing up in Northeast Portland, Nick, one of the things that drove me is I wanted to change my circumstances. Mm-hmm. I wanted to see the world. I wanted to create future opportunities for my family and I, and that was my why. That was driving me. And once I figured out the plan was to get to Oregon and get it on that track and get on that field. I was willing to put in the work. And the work part, as you know, is where a lot of people struggle, because they want it now. They want it yesterday. There's this entitlement syndrome, but success is an endurance race, and you got to be willing to put in the work over a period of time. And if you do that, then obviously opportunities truly do start opening up.
So seizing it also means bringing a mindset of patience along with it.
Absolutely.
I love that.
Absolutely.
Love it.
Yeah. Along with that champion mindset, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. Well, the champion mindset is really about, like Nick knows, just the mental part. Because before you can achieve anything, you got to have your mindset right.
Yeah.
Because one idea in any given moment can take you to the top or it can take you below. You're either winning or you're losing. So it's understand how you got to be able to control your thought process so you ultimately can get the body to do what the mind's telling it to do.
JJ, I'd love to hear your take on something. I always say the most devastating cancerous emotion that you can have is self-doubt, and it creeps into all of our minds. Some of us deal with it better than others. How do you deal with self-doubt?
Yeah, that's a good question. Here's how I deal with it. When I have those moments where maybe I'm doubting myself or I'm dealing with failure or something like that, I always try to relook it as this. Okay, here's an opportunity for me to have a breakthrough. A breakthrough. Because when you have a breakthrough, you make a decision and all of a sudden either some impactful thing happens in your life or you end up regressing. And a breakthrough is when you make that decision of, hey, this is going to be my moment to take me to bigger and better things. And so for me, like when I tore my ACL ligament, that was my thought. I said, hey, either this can take me out or it can take me to a whole nother level. And I made a conscious decision. And that's where preparation and putting in the work so you have the confidence to know that when you have that self-doubt, you know you have the ability. You just got to get out there and do it.
I love it. We're both underdogs in our core, right? You are an underdog coming from Northeast Portland. I'm an underdog, short, stocky, white kid from Boise, Idaho, trying to make Olympic teams. You know, I just think we like that. I don't know about you. I like the underdog mentality. I like that there aren't expectations, that I can go in there and surprise people. How, with all that you've accomplished now in life, how do you still keep that chip on your shoulder and that underdog mentality when you're a very, very successful person?
I'll tell you how. One of my keynotes is titled, Every Day is Game Day.
Love it.
And that's the mentality we had to have in the NFL. You had to bring your best every day. And it wasn't just Sunday. It was Monday through Sunday. Because if you didn't, you got replaced.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so today, Nick, Kamala, I still have that same mindset. Bring my best, whether it's as a father, as a husband, as an entrepreneur, trying to stay fit. I don't like mediocrity. It's about bring your best every single day and you get the results you want.
I love that.
It reminds me, you know, when you're an NFL player, when you're on the U.S. Olympic team, there are literally millions of people trying to take your job and you have to show up ready to play every single day or someone is going to take your job happily. They'll probably do it for less money. They'll probably work harder than you. So you have to always be thinking about that guy or girl out there that's trying to take your job.
Yeah, you do. And I always remind people, I have these young athletes who are calling me about football, and I say, just remember this. There's 1,696 men that are on the active NFL roster every single year. 1,696 out of millions who are playing. What are you willing to sacrifice? What are you willing to do to be one of those men? And to be able to say I was there for 9 years and part of that 1,692, that's probably what I'm most proud of. I didn't go to the Pro Bowl.
You should
I'm
be.
Not
yeah, that yeah, longevity. That longevity is incredible.
Yeah, longevity. Yep.
How often do you make it back to Northeast Portland?
You know what, dude? I was just there a month ago, and it sure has changed.
I was just going to say, it's actually
growing.
A pretty nice neighborhood now. They got some great restaurants, beautiful new apartments. It's the place to be.
I know. It has really changed. I mean, that area we used to run around at night, it's like being in a new city.
Yeah,
but
completely.
I do like some of the things Portland has added, but the traffic was absolutely horrible.
Well, that's why we're calling you from Springfield, Oregon. We don't have a whole lot of traffic out here. Some turkeys crossing the road once in a while. But I hear you. So what's life like down in Phoenix now? I know you're speaking. I know you've got your hands in a lot of different things. Tell us what life's like.
Oh, man, I love it. I mean, my family's here, and I've been married 29 years.
Congratulations.
That's Raina. Awesome.
Thank you. She's actually from Springfield, Oregon, by the way.
Oh, we love her then.
Love it.
Yeah, so we have three children. We adopted five nieces and nephews 10 years ago. So we had eight children we raised, and the last one just graduated. So we're almost empty nesters.
Congratulations.
But,
what are you going to do as empty nesters having raised this many children?
We're going to see the world.
Good for you guys. You've earned it. You've earned it.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, I hope your travels bring you back to Eugene, Oregon. We'd love to see you here at Rungum HQ. We appreciate your time and your wisdom. If our listeners want to continue following you, where can they do so?
Yeah, definitely go to my website, jjburden.com. I'm all over social media, JJ Burden. And I love to interact. So send me a message and let's connect.
Love it. Can we find your book too on your website?
Yes, that's cool. The best place to get it because I sign every book that comes that's a purchase through my website.
Wonderful. Perfect. Wonderful. Well, be sure to get a copy of that. JJ, you're the man. We love you. We love our ducks around here.
We do.
And I want to leave with this conversation just saying I wish I could have watched you jump because I heard it was a thing of beauty.
Oh, dude, I appreciate it. Well, I tell you what, I love watching you run and what I loved about the way you ran. How you finish. You always finish strong. That's how you got to do it.
Yeah, it's all about the last meter, right? The first 799 are just a warm up for that last one.
That's right.
All right, JJ. Hey, appreciate you.
Thanks for your time.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate you too.
A big thank you to everyone for joining us on that episode. If you want to find out more or listen to other episodes, go to rungum.com/podcast. Also, please make sure to subscribe on iTunes or your preferred player. I'm Nick Simmons, and you've been listening to the Run the Day podcast. Until next time.